Nutmeg Radio.
With Lauren and Nadia.
Nutmeg.
You are tuning in to Nutmeg Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of Nutmeg Radio. Today, we have a really exciting guest on the podcast. We have Dagmar Khan, who is a leading women's health specialist and founder of the Flourish Institute. So, Dagmar, would you like to give us a little rundown about what that actually entails?
Nadia, Loren, I'm so honored to be here, and I'm so excited to speak to your incredible audience, and I would love to dive in. So I stand for sovereignty in healthcare when it comes to women's health, specifically women's pelvic health. And before we like turn off anyone who might not identify with this, let me share that when it comes to women's pelvic health, firstly, the future of our species depends on a well female pelvis, and everything from menstrual cycle through pregnancy or the lack of it. We have a massive infertility crisis happening all around the globe, through recovery after birth, through a good sex and sexual desire and orgasm, all the way to meaningful transition through menopause and into the postmenopause, is fully connected to well-functioning, healthy, and integrated pelvis.
Wow. So you, within your business, do you cover all of these aspects?
100%. And what's very important to say is a pelvis is not, or a pain in the pelvis or dysfunction in the pelvis is not some separate far part from the shoulder or the brain or the liver. In fact, pelvis lives in the ecosystem, and we are looking at addressing women's pelvic pain or endometriosis or infertility. We're actually looking at the health and well-being and functioning of the entire body. How does the pelvis, so does the female body, and how does the female body, so does her pelvis and her pelvic bowl.
Mm. I just feel like there is so little resources and information out there, and, you know, women's health in general, there's almost just like this gray area around it where people just don't really know. Like, we just accept all of these kind of female issues like endometriosis and polycystic ovary syndrome and having really painful periods and infertility. We just kind of accept them as being normal, but there doesn't seem to be any solid kind of research behind it, or like anywhere that you can go to actually get information on these things of like how to make it better without just taking a pill to subdue the side effects. So
I can't agree more. And yeah, that's the reason why I've created Flourish Institute in the first place, because I was simply dissatisfied with the status quo in like the female pelvic pain space. And I knew that we have to create a very educated practitioners to bring this information and this way of working with female body in a way that leads to lasting resolution. And subsequently, women, the client side, the patient side, you know, our mothers, our daughters, our siblings, they have potential to live better in their bodies. We have received so many outdated stories. Everything to do with our pelvis is meant to hurt us. The first sex is meant to hurt us. The menstrual bleed is meant to hurt us. The giving birth is meant to hurt us. The menopause, it's like, yeah, that's end of your life. Like, forget it. Your husband will leave you and your VJ, your desire is like completely out of the window. And we have all these stories that are literally living in our cells and our nervous system. And I'm here to say it's time to like really shake in the status quo and start learning a way of both navigating these challenges, but also living in our bodies in a way that leads to sovereignty in our healthcare and sovereignty in our well-being.
Mm. So I'm gathering that there's some kind of a personal journey that got you to this point. Do you want to give us a little rundown on that?
Has to be, right? Yeah. I think, and we see that a lot in transformational space, like the greatest missions are born out of the greatest wounds and the greatest pain. And my own awakening into the journeys of the mysteries of female pelvis came initially out of becoming a very young mother. I became mother when I was only 18. And my boy, my son, his name is Samir, he became the light of my day. I was actually incredibly happy to be a mother, and he brought meaning and purpose into my life at a very, very young age. That being said, relationship with his father was completely falling apart, and there was a lot of pain and friction. And in the following 4 years, by the time I was 22 and my boy was 4, I had the courage, or the way I like to call it now, the ovarian power, to apply for divorce. And my ex-husband at that point, he decided to punish me for the divorce by kidnapping our son. And he kidnapped Samir, and I was brutally separated from Samir for 18 months of my life. These were some of the most horrendous days and nights I've ever went through. And I think the hardest part, and we speak a lot to trauma survivors and abuse survivors, the hardest thing in trauma is when you see no light at the end of the tunnel. Like, even when you're suffering, but you're like, okay, this will pass. There's some way of orienting to possibility or better outcome. But when we don't have that, and we are, you know, gaslit or mentally violated or physically violated, we're like, no, and in turn, that's what leads to complete collapse. And many times, in many people's cases, suicide too. So in those 18 months, I was heavily suicidal because I was told every single day, no, you're not going to see your boy again, ever. And I'm so blessed through the right judicial system, through a lot of prayers of other people for my well-being and for my well-being with my son. We got reunited in 18 months' time. But the interesting thing, Nadia, was that at that point in time, I stepped in a new relationship with a wonderful man. He is my husband, and we have been ever since. We are together for 17 years. We have an extraordinary relationship. And we said, like, hey, we want to be a parents. This is a good relationship. You know, let's make a baby. But my reproductive system, because of the trauma of the kidnap, shut down. My reproductive system said, no, you're not going there. You are not going to be pregnant. And in that, I went through 10 years of my own infertility. And I was so obsessed with becoming mother. Yes, I was petrified of it, but I was obsessed with it at the same time. And I said to myself, I will do whatever it takes to heal my reproductive system. So I traveled the world, literally the whole world, and I studied with the titans in the space of pain management and trauma recovery and, you know, female studies and female body and everything I could put my hands on to ultimately heal my reproductive system. In those 10 years, I obviously started to work with women on pelvic pain and incontinence and organ prolapse and sexual trauma and vaginal pain and everything in between. And I started to see a lot of similarities. Not always, but a lot of interplay was something really difficult has happened, like in one of the topics when I tiptoe our way into is endometriosis. I started to observe that women with endometriosis usually experience very significant loss in their life. Also, women with infertility, like myself, experience a very significant loss in their life and their reproductive system shut down, or their endometrium starts to create all this inflammation and internal scarring leading into endometriosis. So I started to observe, I was very curious to see, go deeper in under the symptoms of what my body was presenting, what my client's body was presenting. And I started to observe a lot of patterns, a lot of similarities, a lot of continuities. And at the 10 years mark of my own healing journey, through everything, like the accumulation of all the healing and embodiment, I became so happy because I conceived my second son. His name is Rumi. He's now 4 years old. He kicks my butt now, by the way, and my husband's too. But he is the greatest blessing of my life. And any day I look at him, I have a testament that anything when it comes to healing female body is possible, because I've been through that. And I've seen now thousands of women that I have been blessed to work with, either directly myself or through one of our Flourish practitioners, that there's just exponential healing that's available in female body when we know how to orient our way into the healing.
Wow.
Wow.
That is quite a journey. Yeah, I'm a little bit sidetracked now, but firstly, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. I can't even imagine having a child kidnapped for 18 months. That, like you say, that is a long time. And to get through that is absolutely incredible. Like, those would have been the absolute darkest days of your life, no doubt about it. So, you know, obviously your courage and your sheer determination and that kind of will, that kind of like mother's will to kind of just push through, was very, very strong in you. But you brought up something really interesting in that kind of segment around endometriosis, and from your perspective, seeing, you know, there's usually this correlation between women who have experienced a lot of loss experiencing endometriosis. Are you able to kind of speak about that a little bit further?
Certainly, I'll be happy to. So firstly, you know, endometriosis is a huge problem. I'm smiling here, but it's not a funny topic. It affects 10% of female population around the world. It's a massive silent problem, not being spoken about enough. And the idea in the, like, the treatment solution for endometriosis, it's a hormonal problem. So when woman has endometriosis, when even like she's lucky enough to be diagnosed with endometriosis, like, let's put you on a hormonal contraceptive. But what's very interesting with that is there are some women that actually respond well to hormonal contraceptive, which kind of gives us a tick into, yes, that was a hormonal problem in her body. But there are also a lot of women that do not respond well to contraceptive, and either it does zilch for them or it makes their condition worse, which gives us directly a very clear clue that this is not a hormonal problem and there are other things that have to be addressed. So speaking of loss and speaking of emotions and speaking of trauma, what we do want to understand is that human body is like a map. A human body, a female body, speaks to us in symptoms, in issues, in diseases, all day, every day. And we had that major opening into that, obviously, with Louise L. Hay work, You Can Heal Your Life. Like, she's the pioneer in the space of metaphysics. She has created a full list of diseases A to Z and possible, like, a negative a thought pattern or way of being, and like how to start ameliorating that. And we are so, like, grateful and delighted for her work. That being said, I think we really need to go deeper beneath the layer of, you know, affirmations, and we really need to start understanding the body on a deep level. So what we have observed with women with endometriosis is that they usually experience like a really significant loss in their life. It can be maybe a miscarriage that just took them and just shook them to the core. Maybe it's a loss of their father that they love dearly, or of their child. And what happens with the loss that's, again, significant, it works as a major shock in the system. Loss is represented as a major shock in the system. And the womb and the pelvis, they are affected by a lot of unique systems in the body, including obviously the muscles, the bones. We're also looking here at things like lymphatic system and nervous system. So from a perspective of everything in the body is designed for healing. The one thing that body wants at all times is creating homeostasis. The homeostasis, that being said, is very dependent on, I'm going to give you like a simple maths. If either of you like a scientific equation, or maybe this will be very meaningful for your listeners. The homeostasis happens through waste out, nutrients in. Waste out, nutrients in this order. A lot of people like to go at the nutrients in, hey, let me get those supplements, let me get the fish oils, and let me get the multivitamin, what have you. Then I'm going to focus like once a month on my detoxification, right? No. We got to get the waste out first, then the nutrients in. Now, how this all connects and what we are talking here about, the loss and endometriosis, and I mentioned before lymphatic system. When there is a shock in the body, the shock actually creates a lot of standstill in the way fluids are moving. And above the uterus, we have a very significant point for the nerds in you. It's called cisterna chyli. And cisterna chyli is one of the most important lymphatic nodes in the body. It's also a direct doorway in discharging shock in the system. And when the cisterna chyli is really messed up, it's not fluids through the cisterna chyli are not moving well, it's going to actually affect the structures and the tissues of the endometrium. So here we have basically a situation where a loss for a woman can be so devastating that it in her system gets locked as a shock. And the shock is obviously creating stress and anxiety and all of that, but also impeding with the movement of fluids. And suddenly we have a situation where the blood is not moving efficiently into the uterus, and the metabolic waste, the cellular waste, is not being discharged well. And we're starting to have a situation where the endometrium is begin to do a lot of messy thing, including creating tons of scar tissue and resulting in a lot of pain. So one of our kind of like a doorway into the endometrial work and working with women endometriosis is actually helping her in a safe, this is not like, let's shake you, in a really safe and loving way, help her start releasing the shock from her system through deep, very specific deep meditation, through very specific things like hypnosis, hypnotic reprogramming, help her feel really, really safe about the loss that has happened for her, and start creating a new narrative around that, and then tying that with releasing the cisterna chyli, doing lymphatic work so that the fluids can begin to move through her efficiently, creating the environment in her body where healing can start to happen.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm such a little geek on things like that. So I absolutely love listening to that. It's so interesting because I've got polycystic ovaries and I'm just kind of swerving a little bit here. But what I thought was really interesting, I went to get some tests done recently just to check sort of my fertility levels, sort of coming into like my mid 30s and sort of where I sit with that. And one of the ladies who was doing the scans, I said to her, I was like, oh, like, you know, how's everything looking? And she's like, oh yeah, it looks fine. You know, we have so many women come in. There are girls that basically every girl now has polycystic ovaries. We don't even test for it anymore. And I looked at her and I was like, what? And you're just saying this, like, this is okay. And this is the new normal. And I was quite shocked by it. So I think it's really interesting listening to that because it kind of makes me think that these women can have these big traumatic experiences at some stage in their life. But how do you kind of, how does that translate into teenage girls or young girls who are just coming into puberty and having these hormonal things, and then they go straight into just having polycystic ovaries? Like, how does that kind of, is that something to do with sort of past life traumas, or can you kind of give me a little bit of insight on how the polycystic side of things taps into that?
Yeah, certainly. So with polycystic, we are obviously looking at a very different scenario. Endometriosis is generally known as like a high estrogen situation, where polycystic ovaries is a very different situation. We're looking like a high testosterone situation, generally speaking. Now, there is a lot to be said on so many levels. And I do believe that a lot of ailments down there, including polycystic ovaries, including amenorrhea, including just like all these disruption to menstrual cycle, are very heavily connected to really the narratives that are given to us from literally from the birth. We can be tracing things all the way back to how baby was actually born. And we know that vaginal delivery allows baby to receive mother's vaginal microbiome, which literally creates like the foundation for immune health. We know nuances between breastfeeding versus bottle feeding and how that actually develops one's immune system. So I am someone who is not very much into past trauma, but what I do know is there are very specific things, there are very specific series of events that happen as early as childbirth, and truth to be told, as early as when baby is actually growing in mother's womb. How is the mother feeling? What kind of support she is receiving? How does she feel about the pregnancy? How does she feel about her body, her stress levels, but even things like exposure to chemicals and pollution. All of that sets imprint into the human body. That being said, like really from this like spiritual and metaphysical perspective, I do believe that what we get to know to be true about our female body, our menstruation, the expectation of menstruation, the value of menstruation affects the way our menstruation gets or not to be gets or not or does not get to be expressed. What I have observed with many of my clients, and I don't know whether that's true for you or not, Lauren, but I have observed a lot of narrative such as, you know, menstruation is cursed and let's not get into that because we'll get you pregnant and your whole life will be destroyed. And our body, even as very young age, 8, 9, 10, is listening to all of this and is developing biochemical reactions that are in alignment to the pain, the fear, the worry, the "it shouldn't be this way" that's being given to us. Which is why I do love working with mothers on kind of like that educational premise, so they themselves like can start shifting all the lies and bullshit stories that have been given to them and begin to give their daughters, maybe their granddaughters, a new way of experiencing what being woman in 21st century in the world that's collapsing actually means. And I think we can do it with a lot of beauty and a lot of love affair for ourselves and for our biological functions too.
Amazing. And then how does that translate into, say, like natural childbirth compared to, having like medical assisted childbirth, and then also like the recovery after you give birth to a child? I can imagine that is quite a traumatic experience to go through in someone's body. And yeah, how does one kind of come out the other side of that in the best possible way?
You don't have child yet, right, Lauren? You know the mother?
Can you tell? No.
And isn't that interesting that even, and I'm just going to say with deep love, that even as you did not go through a birth, you expect it to be traumatic.
Yeah. It's the narrative, right?
That's the narrative that we are being given. Yeah, big time. So I want to say full hand on my heart, my second birth with Rumi, and I see myself as like the queen of pelvic embodiment. I live and breathe my work. I was preparing for birth. I was doing my hypnobirthing. I was doing my squatting. I was doing my leg stretches. I was doing my lunges. I was like ecstatically preparing for the birth of my son. I had my back ready. My husband was ready. My birth plan was ready. Like everything was in place. I was like the model for preparing for perfect birth. And guess what? It did not go as expected. I was induced and I got third layer of tear. Shit happens, right? So I think there's a lot to be said about birthing in a way that does not scare the shit of us, but birthing in a way that feels honoring of the transition that we are in, stepping out of one body into two bodies, like stepping in a full-fledged motherhood. And the narrative I love to bring forward is, instead of birth being this scary, traumatic experience that's going to destroy our bodies and tear our vaginas, the big promise in the birthing world is like, let's make it orgasmic. And that might be a stretch for many people. In my world, I like to see it as an experience that's reverent and that's respectful and that's honoring for both the mother, but also the baby and also the child. I believe in us actively preparing our body and our psyche for giving birth. And at the same time, being open to the possibility that things can happen in an unexpected way. And that alone can tear pelvic floor and vagina. And after that, some recovery work is required. For me, reverence is the name of the game.
Because there seems to be, you know, from my own witnessing of like quite a few different people in my life, a lot of people don't have an issue conceiving their first child. But when it comes to that second child, there's often a bit of a lag time and some quote-unquote infertility that happens around that second child. So is it a similar thing, do you think, in that people are potentially storing trauma from their first child? And it's literally because, I mean, technically there isn't anything, you know, they've had tests, they've done all of the things, there's nothing wrong with them, there's nothing medically wrong or nothing that the medical system can pick up anyway. But they're still experiencing this real hardship around conceiving again and conceiving and actually holding a pregnancy. So is that a similar thing where your body is literally going, fuck that, last time we did that, it really didn't go that well and we don't want to go there again?
100%. And that's the secret double bind that no one talks about, right? There are women that will say to everyone and themselves, I want to be mother again. It's time for the second child. But there is a part of them that's petrified of stepping into motherhood again. And we don't speak about it. In our society, in our culture, we don't hold a space for like full-fledged, you know, there is the fear of being mother, but then there is a shame that gets created around this because, hey, I should be mother again. I should have two children and my family should be complete. Da 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 da. And, you know, my older one needs a sibling. Of course, I have to step into that. And then we judge ourselves for the fact that we feel the fear of being mother, but we never actually resolve the fear of being mother. And that's a very common piece I see with so many women in this, to what you're sharing, Nadia. It's like, yeah, I've had my first child, my second child, there is a difficulty with that. There are a lot of layers to this. And I've seen really just a life-changing healing for women who start to actually work with the fear. So it's not about the supplements. It's not about going through next 1,000 infertility checks. But it's like, hey, let's actually address this psychodrama that's happening at the level of psyche and help you like bolster more of your desire and your attention and your intention for building and growing your family.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that kind of seemed intuitive to me, but there just seems to be, you know, I feel really sorry for people because they almost start to beat up on themselves and they start to beat up on their bodies. Like, there's something wrong with me, but it's all of this kind of like subconscious stuff that just isn't being addressed. And so from my perspective, because I work with people in trauma, not specifically in this realm, but in general, and so many of our fears are very subconscious that we have no idea. Like, consciously, it's like, I mean, it's the same thing with like people consciously want a relationship, but subconsciously they're really scared of about getting hurt. Yeah, no. So yeah, that it's kind of fascinating, that aspect to me.
Your subconscious is 30,000 times stronger than your conscious mind. 30,000 times.
Because it's 90%, right? Your subconscious makes up 90%. Your conscious only makes up 10%. Like, that's a big battle.
You better work with the subconscious if you want to become mother again. I always say that with like a deep smile to my people, because, you know, it's a sensitive and tender topic, but we really have to address our deep mind. It's essential.
Yeah. Something that kind of came through to me as you were talking around PCOS and also the endometriosis piece is the like, you know, it can either be that sort of trauma loss side of things or hormonal issues. Are there specific things that people can do for, if it's a hormonal issue, is birth control or something like that the best route? Or are there like other things that you can do that can actually balance your hormones without having to go down the synthetic hormone route?
Great question, Nadia, and a massive topic. And in my world, I don't purchase the route of contraceptives. And there's a very specific reason. There's a beautiful body of work from a woman called Lara Biden, who is world-renowned for menstrual recovery and really understanding the value of menstruation, even more in-depth ovulation. And one of her famous saying is, monthly ovulation is a deposit to a long-term health of a woman. And we are not talking here just reproductive health. We're talking in bone health. We're talking in mental health. We're talking in nervous system health. We're talking here a health that matters to us in a long run. Why? Because ovulation is how, in the reproductive years, before we step into menopause transition, is how we create our hormones. And what contraceptive does, it literally, it turns off the ovulation. It turns off the part of the brain that communicates the brain to the ovaries for the sequence of physiological events that lead to ovulation. So with contraception, we don't have ovulation. With contraception, our body does not produce hormones naturally, but we are getting these exogenous hormones. We're getting synthetic hormones from outside in. And except of certain exception in a very specific endometrial cases, is a really a no-go zone for us. what we are seeing, and in Flourish Institute, I have developed a way of working with the body, which is called a hierarchy of healing. And in a hierarchy of healing, we basically look at all the systems in the body. Are we talking here your brain, your liver, your lymphatic system, all the systems, and how we need to sequence the healing in a way that actually leads to what we want. And that is reduction of, in the case of endometriosis, this overgrowth of endometrium, and actually optimal functioning of the uterus, reducing of the pain, reducing of the inflammation, healing of the gut, all of that stuff. So to the earlier point that I said, if you remember, waste out first, then nutrients in, we want to start getting, we have found a woman with endometriosis respond exquisitely well to lymphatic work. Exquisitely well. And you know, lymphatic, I am a big voice for lymphatic work in the world, specifically as it relates to women's pelvic pain. And I tell you why. Because lymphatic system is the last system people think about when it comes to chronic pain, chronic inflammation, endometriosis. It's the one that gets like tossed aside in the medical schools, but is the most important one. Is the most important system for addressing chronic pain and chronic inflammation. Why? Because lymphatic system is the system of detoxification. It's also a big part of the immune system. And when people think about lymphatic system, it's like, hey, there's my brush. Let me pull in my dry brush. Let me do some dry brushing before I hop in the shower. Well, this is great. But that kind of lymphatic work never goes after what a woman with endometriosis needs. And that is understanding that we also have a deep lymphatics. And much of our lymphatics is actually in small intestine. It's in the thorax and it's in the gut. So we must start doing a deep lymphatic work to actually address those structures and those tissues and help women release inflammation that's held at the level of the intestines, held at the level of organ body. This is so powerful. And I have literally seen women that have those type of endometriosis, like, hey, when I'm bleeding, I literally have to go to hospital. I'm in so much pain. I'm falling apart and I have to have infusion. To a place of, I'm doing my lymphatic work throughout the month and menstruation comes. Yes, I'm a bit uncomfortable, but I'm totally fine. I can get through my day, take care of my family, or, you know, take care of my work, and my life is doable. It makes that big of a difference. The second piece I want to speak to that really, really needs to be brought more to light is the connection between endometriosis and autoimmunity. So there are a lot of studies now that show that start to see endometriosis or some form of endometriosis being an autoimmune condition. And we are seeing autoimmunity being on the rise. In fact, I think that we are all on the brink of getting some autoimmune conditions in the next 15 to 20 years. And I would be curious to think, it's for us to start asking a question of the events of our world and everything that we are seeing unfolding, from the quality of our food or the lack of it, through the climate changes, through, we are in Europe here and war in Ukraine has started 7 days ago. It's atrocious. Through COVID pandemic, how the way we process stress, how the way we process the assaults or injustices or the wounds or the genocides of the world, how is that actually affecting our immune system? And that's a deep question for us to start sitting with.
It's kind of scary in a way when you think about it. When you think about the amount, I know, but when you think about the amount of like collective trauma that we are going through as a species. And then you throw things like, you know, a mass vaccination at the entire population into the mix, which is obviously going to be affecting the immune system in some way, which we don't entirely know at this point in time. And everything else, like how, and just the pure kind of tidal wave that's happening with the amount of information that we take in as human beings and the stress that that puts our nervous systems under, how we are as a collective going to actually be able to move through this and process this and come out the other side. Like, what is the kind of effect on our health going to be, you know?
Which leads us to a critical point and really the foundational element that we hold through in Flourish Institute, and that is sovereignty in healthcare. And to me, sovereignty in healthcare means, first and foremost, we gotta know our bodies. You know, I jokingly say always to my people, it's like women know the streets of their towns better than they know the sacred chambers of their bodies. How is it possible? I work with a 45-year-old woman and, you know, we start tiptoeing into her liver and she doesn't even know where her liver is. How is it possible that, you know, we work with a woman who is 32, who is trying to get pregnant, and she doesn't know that contraceptive is stopping her ovulation? To me, this is our basic human skill to acquire, to know how our bodies work and how our bodies function. And from there, develop set of practices, or even better said, set of a way of being in our body, lifestyle practice, the way we live, that's actually allowing us to source healthcare inside of us, a source healthcare in our bodies. Our bodies are riddled with these magic codes for healing, literally magic codes. And I'm not talking a law of attraction. I'm talking in a pure physiology. One of the magic codes I already give you, lymphatic system, it is a marvel of architecture. And when we know how to work with the lymphatics in an optimal way, it's like, you know, having the best detox spa in your pocket that you can access like every single morning and every single night. It's a game changer. Another of those magic codes we spoke about is our subconscious. We can work so beautifully with our subconscious to ameliorate pain, to reduce inflammation, to boost our immune system, to, you know, support the healing of our liver. So much can be done with going after the subconscious. And the third one that I, oh my God, like I'm getting orgasm here just thinking about it. Orgasm could be one of them too.
100%.
Our vagus nerve, a 10th cranial nerve, the uber connected, the uber highway of the brain, the lung, the heart, the gut, into the uterus, all the way down into the cervix. And the vagus nerve is really a chief regulator for everything that's happening in the body. And it doesn't matter whether someone has PCOS or endometriosis or infertility or pelvic pain or incontinence or struggling with menopausal transition, we better start addressing our vagus nerve. And it is a marvel for helping us feel safe, connected, prime in our body. And to that point, you know, that scary stuff can stay scary here, but it doesn't have to affect my physiology because I know my body and I can trigger those magic healing codes anytime I want to.
Mm. Do you do a lot of work with the vagus nerve?
Yes, a tons. And in our hierarchy of healing that I was mentioning, sequencing the healing well, vagus is on the top. Vagus is number one. Brain is number one, because everything in the body is really from like the subconscious primal brain perspective. Your body's main job is to not die, period. You know, subconscious say, hey, you've been alive today. doesn't matter whether your liver has cirrhosis, or doesn't matter that you end up in hospital because of your endometrial pain. Doesn't matter if you can't get pregnant. I am so happy that I survived. Like, job well done, right? Vagus nerve operates at that spectrum. Vagus nerve operates on the deep subconscious layers. So when we can start toning and regulating and healing our vagus nerve, it's going to have a cascade of ripple effect on the change and healing resolution, healing transformation that we want to facilitate in female body, including the female pelvis and the female reproductive system.
Because there's a heap of research that's come out around the nervous system and the vagus nerve in recent times, and I find it very fascinating and really exciting. It's like we're uncovering this whole other layer that, like, I kind of see it as being like we've been just skimming the surface when it comes to healthcare and like actually being able to look after ourselves. And I feel like this element, because it literally interlinks so many parts of our body, it's like we've just like peeled off this whole other layer and we're just seeing this like massive new space in which to be able to step into a really like optimal health, because there's not that many people in the world that live, I would say, in optimal health. We kind of just scrape by for the most part, being happy with random symptoms of all different kinds, you know, and I feel like this is really going to allow people to go to that next level.
Yes, I love that. And in a way that puts them together and in a way that's so applicable, and it's applicable for them, it's applicable for their mamas, for their papas, for their sisters, for their cousins. Vagus nerve work is absolutely for everyone. And it is that crucial application of us finding a sense of orientation, okayness, and doability, even as things are happening that are not in agreement with our souls or with our desire to be fully alive as humans.
Mm. Something that was kind of coming up for me as well was, especially around, I think probably the two most common, and that's why we keep coming back to them, the two most common reproductive health problems from my perspective would be polycystic ovaries and endometriosis, where you said earlier polycystic ovaries is a elevation of testosterone. Endometriosis is the opposite, in a elevation of estrogen. And so to me, there seems like there could be quite a strong correlation between these conditions and our relationship to masculine and feminine energies and dynamics. Is that something that you work with as well and that you see?
Big time. Yes. Body is never physiological. It's always a combination of energetics and physiology, unquestionably. And we're kind of looking at that when I was mentioning like the effects of the stories and what's being passed on to us as like, you know, this is the truth and this is how things are. So what we are seeing a lot is with PCOS, there can many times be, and there's never just like, you know, this is 100% like that for everyone. We're obviously talking in like a broad sense. But what we are seeing a lot is at some level, hardship with being a woman. It's like, it's not safe for me to be a woman. But that's, I have seen maybe my mother really struggling in relation to her partner, or there has been a lot of injustice done to women in my lineage, or like this lot of observation of violence or sexual abuse or sexual discrimination. Is not safe to be a woman. And if I were to be a man, I would be much safer. It's much more okay to get by and be okay in a male body. I remember I had that. I didn't have PCOS, but when I was really, really struggling going through the kidnap of my son, I was like, oh, fuck, like, I don't want to be a woman. This hurts so much. I just want to be in a male body. It's so much easier than that. And not surprisingly enough, I have all sort of gut issues because of that. So that is this real hardship with living in a female body. Female body is like this portal of attack. It's much easier, much safer for me to be a man. Now, with endometriosis, on the other side, what we are seeing a lot is like a rejection of femininity, rejection of not deserving, not feeling worthy of experiencing pleasure and feeling pleasure and slowing down and being connected to her senses. The rejection of our femininity is obviously so heavily connected to our body image issues and what we hold through about what's lovable, what's beautiful, what's not beautiful, what's acceptable, what's sexy, what's desirable. And it's not surprising to me with the rise of social media and, you know, our 8-year-olds are holding a latest smartphones and shooting themselves to get on a TikTok and, you know, get approval of their opposite sex. It's not surprising to me that endometriosis and PCOS is happening to younger and younger generations. We have changed how we live. We have changed how we see our value as a woman and how we view ourselves, how we view our bodies. And to me, on a collective level, this is a portal to a new way of being. One where we can attend to ourselves. One where we can like deeply come into space of honoring our bodies. And one where we can really start creating that sense of sovereignty in our healthcare. Sovereignty. I know myself. I understand myself. I understand how my body functions. And I'm willing to let go and release the layers, the beliefs, the narratives, the ideas, the wounds, so I can be whole. So I can live, so I can love, so I can matter, so I can serve, so I can contribute. So this day that has been given to me, because tomorrow is obviously a question, I can live well. To me, this is awakening to a radical, radical self-responsibility. One that can be sourced in this medicine cabinet inside of my body.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's what keeps coming through to me when you're talking. It's just crazy that we grow up in this system where basically we're taught all these things in quotation marks. And I mean, I've heard it before. It's like, you know, once you kind of have a spiritual awakening, it's basically unlearning all the things that you've learned your whole life. And I mean, I totally get that. And I can imagine people who probably listen to this and maybe just quite early into their journey and their process, and they just sit there going, oh my God, how the fuck am I going to do this? This is a really big job to unpack like 30 years of beliefs. You know, it's just so crazy that we've like been living in this state of play where this is how it is. And I hope that by the time like your children grow up and like Nadia and I have children and all of the things, that this isn't actually the state of play and we don't have to spend our entire lives trying to like unlearn all these things that we've been told that this is how you should live your life.
I love what you're saying, and I believe we are the generation of change makers. We are the generation who's saying we're not going to pass the wounds of our parents onto our children. Like, we are the portals to this new way of being and altogether new humanity. And I'm here for that. Hand on the heart, I'm here for that. Two boys. My older one is 20 now. My younger one is 4. It's like, let's do this and let my body be the chamber in which I can hold this service in the world.
Yeah, beautiful. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
I just want to speak to the narrative that it has to be difficult. It doesn't have to be difficult. And there's a lot of fast, again, fast pathway for those people like biohackers, right? It's like, give me those quick fixes. I can't can't spend another 30 years changing everything. No, it doesn't have to be that fast. And that's very much to our earlier point. Subconscious reprogramming is the name of the game. In our work, we actually work with our clients a lot through hypnosis. So in our sessions, or whether they're doing our online courses, what have you, there's a lot of hypnotic reprogramming where people lie down comfortable in their bed, headphones on, you know, nice and snuggled. It's like a mini nap in the afternoon, and they are letting go of all those and literally plugging in your blueprint, and the change happens very, very fast, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I often find also, yes, there is 30 years worth of stuff there, but when it comes to trauma work and comes to reprogramming the subconscious, so long as you get back to the earliest times in which you actually learnt that and that you do the work there, it changes it. You're not having to like reprogram your whole life, every negative situation you've ever been through. It's like you're literally just picking out these key pieces that you're probably not even aware of in your conscious day-to-day life. But it's, yeah, it's not a long, hard, arduous process. It is a journey, but it gets to be what you want it to be, and it gets to be kind of joyful at the same time.
And I love everything that you're sharing, Nadia. And here is that food for the thought. We practice something at all times. At all times. So I can choose, even if it's going to take me next 30 years to turn my stuff around, I can choose to practice something that's in alignment with what I want and how I want to live my life and the contributions I want to create, or just like be this, you know, subconscious martyr to all the stuff that has been done to me and given to me. To me, rising to that sovereignty portal is like really letting the victim consciousness go and activating, priming every part of me to be in this conscious experience called life, conscious experience of living consciously and intentionally in my own body, in harmony with my womb, in harmony with my heart, in harmony with my desires, and in harmony with the well-being of our beautiful female human beings, the mothers, and well-being of our mothers mean well-being and the future of our species.
It's so important.
It's so exciting, I think. You know,
I feel like we could just talk to you forever.
I know. It's like, I feel like, you know, it's almost like growing up and being a rebel, I feel like, because I felt very rebellious growing up. I didn't want to be on contraceptive. I didn't want to do all these things. I didn't really know why, but I was just like, I don't want to buy into this. This doesn't fit right within me. And I'm sure my mom would just be rolling her eyes like, oh, here she goes again. Like, doesn't want to like join that line. She's going to go up the other way instead, you know? And I think it's so nice now to be having these conversations where it's like, all this rebelliousness that I've kind of been forging through my time is now settling into this place of, as you said before, we're kind of like that bridging generation and creating this new norm. And it's so exciting. I almost literally want to take the day off now and just get into a rabbit hole of like all the things you've talked about. I just don't even know how I'm going to work this afternoon.
Oh, so I know it's amazing. I would really love to have you back at some stage to have a conversation around menopause as well. I feel like that's a topic that we don't talk about a lot as a society. And it's like you were saying earlier, very frowned upon. So if that is of interest to you, I would love to have you back to have more of a conversation around that.
Let's do this. Menopause is not a hormonal issue. Just going to leave it there.
As a little teaser. Where can the people find you, Dagma?
Such a wonderful question. So I've spoken about our Flourish Institute, where we primarily work with practitioners and we train them to have the clinical skills, but also transformational coaching tools to address any pelvic, reproductive or gynecological health issue with their clients in a lasting and transformative way, and subsequently create their thriving wellness businesses with a mission that serves humanity. So on that, you can find us on theflourishinstitute.com. The next place where I hang out a lot, I'm not an Instagram girl, which you probably know. There are very few posts on Instagram coming through, but I love my Facebook. I love my Facebook community. So if you're on Facebook, you can connect with me personally. Dagmar Khan is my personal profile. And we have a wonderful, wonderful Facebook group called Women's Health CEO, where we are diving deep on the magic of living in female body, living in female body well, and for the practitioners, the coaches, the therapists in this space, are co-creating these incredible healing results with their clients.
Amazing. I'll put it all in the show notes so that it's all easily found. Thank you so, so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. It's been really eye-opening, and yeah, like Lauren said, I just feel like going down a real rabbit hole now.
Well, I'm so glad to be inspiring this, igniting this revolution of let's do this in your body. That means a lot. Thank you, Nadia. Thank you, Lauren. It's been an absolute honor to be with you today.